This is Emily Thomas, and you are listening to the Mom Struggling Well podcast. Hi, friends. This right here is episode 97, and I'm sharing my chat with Amy Ballantyne. She's a mom who has faced something that we all hope we never have to face, which is a death of a child. And tragically, it hasn't just happened once. While you may not have experienced with this yourself, you've no doubt encountered suffering on top of suffering in your own life and wondered what in the world God was up to. In this chat, there are definitely some tears. The reason I wanted to share Amy with you, though, is because she not only has experienced the losses, she walks other moms through their own infant losses now and is a wealth of all the detailed information about what mom's options are and what to expect in those days following your baby's passing. We also talk about how to answer questions that people innocently ask you, like at Target, and they don't realize that they're getting you to talk about something that is a big place of grief for you. Or, like me, people say things to me that accidentally put me and my kids in awkward positions since they're adopted. A whole lot of families are built unconventionally, and a lot of families have suffered loss. So knowing how to respond in a gracious way to people who ask questions is a good thing, even if you'd rather not think about those weird questions. They're probably going to come. Real quick, though, I want to give a thank you to this week's episode sponsor, Jelly Telly. As a mom, I want my kids to enjoy shows and movies. I know they think I don't want them to enjoy anything about their life, but I really do. The only thing is, I would really like, as much as possible, for those things to point them to Jesus. My family has paid for a subscription for years to Jelly Telly because it's high-quality stuff. My kids are always asking me to sit and watch their shows with them, and I really can't think of anything I'd like to do less than watch kids' shows, but when it's Jelly Telly, I actually enjoy it. Jelly Telly is the only streaming video app that is designed specifically for kids. In the shows, God is real and His word is true. There's no ads that you have to sit through, so your kids aren't going to try to sell you on some ridiculous item that they don't need, but they're pretty sure they do because they saw it on TV. None of that happens. Visit JellyTelly.com today and use the coupon code MSW in all caps. This is just for Mom Struggling Well listeners. You'll get your first week free so you can find your favorite shows on Jelly Telly, and you'll also get a free Jesus downloadable coloring book as well. So that's JellyTelly.com, coupon code MSW. All right, guys, let's go ahead and get started on my chat with Amy Ballantyne. Hi, Amy. How are you today?
I'm good. How are you doing, Emily?
Good.
It's so good to officially meet you.
I know. I love what I've read about you. And so I can't wait to have a talk today. Will you tell everybody about you and your sweet family?
Yes, I would be happy to. Let's see. Our family is an earthly family of five, but a heavenly family of seven. I am married to my husband, Adam. We have our oldest son, who is almost 4 and a half, and his name is Teddy, and he is living. Then we have two sons that reside in heaven, and that is Simon, who would be turning 3 this year. He turns 3 in May. We have a son, Thomas, who he would be turning 2. And we have a living 1 and a half year old, Peter.
Okay.
And then I have a baby in my belly.
Okay.
That I am currently knitting with the Lord. And so I'm a mom to 5, but it's a tough question when people ask,
yes,
how many kids do you have? Is this your first pregnancy? Is this your third? Or a lot of people are calling the baby in my belly our third baby, but we have, you know, a son who lived a week, who's in heaven, and a son who lived to 13 weeks gestation in heaven as well. So it's this, it's a balance. It's kind of a tough question for me to answer.
And I love that you are kind of unpacking it, because I never have been pregnant, but so many of my listeners have experienced what you've experienced in, you know, some degree. So my assumption is, because I don't tell everybody that I dealt with infertility or that my kids are adopted, or, you know, as it comes up, I kind of, it depends. So how do you kind of flesh that out? Because I would assume there's some part of you that says, it's not such a big deal. Like, don't talk about it. Like, get over it. You know, or you feel like either you should, or you feel like you get that from other people. Like, why do you keep bringing that up, type of a thing? So how do you walk that out? I'm not saying that's accurate. I'm just saying that sometimes we like to downplay our own grief.
Yes,
so
absolutely.
How do you hold that tension? How do you know what to say, when to say?
Yeah, you know, it's tough. I mean, there have been times where I've answered that question truthfully, I mean, it's just my truth. I mean, when I say I'm a mom to five, that's just, it's true. And it's sad that it makes me uncomfortable sometimes, and it makes other people uncomfortable. A lot of times when you say I'm a mom to five, people say, oh, well, your hands are full. And then I immediately have to say, well, I kind of wish they were more full. Actually, we only have three living children. One is in my womb, so I'm not even really dealing with that one, except for, like, you know, morning sickness and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Two are really in my care and two are in heaven. And it does create this awkwardness, especially when you're in line at, like, the grocery store. Mm. And it's like, I think to myself, Amy, why did you even share this? I mean, what is the point of sharing this with them? And my answer is, it's the truth.
Okay.
So there have been times where I have shared it, and I've regretted it immediately because they then just tell me my total on my groceries and it's awkward. And I just, you know, slide my card and I get out, you know. Okay. But there's also been times where I haven't shared and I've walked out feeling, and I wouldn't say guilty to my two sons, Simon and Thomas, who live in heaven, but I feel like it just wasn't true. I just lied to the person.
Okay.
So it's a balance that honestly, I'm trying to figure it out.
I mean, I'm sure that if you say that they're in heaven, that opens a door for a spiritual conversation.
It does.
So do you find that that is beneficial?
It is. I think it's beneficial to both people. The person is asked the question. I don't just throw out the fact that I'm mom to five, generally speaking.
Yeah.
It's the question that they've asked and they had no idea, you know, what question they're asking. It's just like when you ask the married couple, when are you going to start having kids? And they're like, well, we've been trying to for 3 or 4 years now.
Yeah.
It's just our truth that we should be willing to share it. And I know it makes us vulnerable and raw and it makes it uncomfortable, but it does lead to spiritual growth, both for yourself and hopefully for the person that you're willing to share it with. And it depends. I mean, the grocery store line's one thing, but at the library, someone asked me about if the baby I was carrying was my second baby, and I was able to have a conversation with that woman and kind of tell her the truth and share the gospel with her. And that doesn't happen all the time. And that's, you know, kind of happened one time.
Yeah.
But I think it was life-giving to both of us.
Yeah. Because people tell me, you know, your daughter looks just like you. I'm like, oh, okay. Well, that's completely a fluke because I didn't make her. Or one time, oh man, we went to this church we were visiting years ago when we first moved here. And the pastor, my husband and I have green eyes and my son has brown eyes because he's adopted. And the pastor, I was holding my son and we were all like, all of our eyes were at the same level. And the pastor, the first thing he said to us was, you know, in science class, they tell you that two green eyed people can't make a brown eyed baby. And I'm like, I think it's accurate. it was so awkward. And you feel bad when they have stepped in something they didn't mean to step in.
Exactly. Did you just kind of laugh it off? Or did
you
explain?
Yeah, we said they were right in science class and he's adopted.
Well, they are right. Yeah. That's true. Yeah. That's so true. Yeah. And it's just, it's so hard when you, I mean, that situation is a perfect example of, like, obviously you can let that go and that you didn't need to school him on the fact that your son's adopted. But you also just wonder, like, where could this lead to if I would be vulnerable enough? My husband and I, we live in the Midwest. We're in Kansas City. We moved from San Francisco, but we're Midwesterners through and through. I'm from St. Louis. He's from Kansas City. We live in Kansas City, but we had several years in San Francisco. And when we were on our way back from San Francisco, we just really talked about having this desire of just wanting to be vulnerable and real with people. We wanted to stop getting together with our friends and talking about sports and decorating our homes. And we wanted real, authentic, true, vulnerable relationships with people that just went further than surface level. And this was in 2012. And little did we know, 2 years later, we'd be meeting Simon and having this blog that, I mean, like, I laugh at it now. And I even laughed at it when my husband and I kind of put it all together. Like, we asked God for this vulnerable relationship with our friends. And here we are. We've been given this vulnerability of just being honest about what it's like to walk through a terminal diagnosis with your baby.
Yeah. So let's talk about that. You knew before they were born, both of them, that this was going to end in them not living. Yes?
No, separately. So Simon, we found out at about 18 weeks gestation that something might not look right on his anatomy scan.
Okay.
So my husband and I, even this is kind of crazy, in our pre-marriage class, we even talked about how we did not want to find much out about our babies in utero. We just kind of wanted to see what God was going to give us. And we kind of made that promise to one another. And so we did general scans. You know, we did a 12-week scan and the 20-week scan. So we were on the full anatomy scan at around 20 weeks with Simon. And we didn't know that he was a boy at the time. And we went in to get a sonogram. And the sonographer, you know, it's the story that so many have, started to act kind of strange and called in the doctor and said that we think that your baby might have enlarged kidneys. And so I was an event planner, a wedding planner in San Francisco and Chicago. And I'm not a nurse. So I had no idea what really that meant. We don't really Google medical things like that very often. And
it's probably wise.
Yeah, exactly. And so we just walked out of that sonogram and just kind of tried to forget about it. Our doctor recommended that we schedule a level 2 sonogram. I didn't know what that was. I actually didn't Google that either.
Okay.
I just kind of thought it was they're going to go in, they were going to look at the kidneys, they were either going to be enlarged, they weren't going to be enlarged, we'd walk out. You know, it was just kind of, I didn't even have my husband come with me.
Can I ask you, the choice not to Google, was that conscious or you just kind of moved on? Or do you know you're anxious and you chose not to do that?
Yeah, I just didn't want to worry before we needed to worry. Okay. Those sonograms can tell you so much about your baby. And, you know, then your doctor says, come back in 4 weeks or come back in a week and we'll look at, let's say, the brain. There looks like there are pockets of air on the brain, you know, or something like that for someone. And then they come back 4 weeks later and it's gone. And so they've taken 4 weeks of their life Googling and worrying about what could this be? What is this? Before you even really know. For me, it just felt like a waste of time and it would just make me more, I am a little anxious, a little bit hyper. And so I didn't need to know all those details.
Okay.
So I just kind of went into this level 2 ultrasound with like 20 minutes worth of toys and snacks for my about 14 month old, so Teddy, our oldest. And then I realized a level 2 ultrasound is a full body detail ultrasound. And I did not know that. And so about an hour and a half later, we find out, you know, I was kind of giggling through it. And the sonographer finally just said, I'm seeing a lot here. I'd love for you to just kind of sit more still and be a little bit more quiet and let me get through this. Oh. And I thought, and I actually sat straight up and just said, stop. This is not what we've decided to do. I did not know that this is what I was walking into. I'm learning too much about this baby. I feel like this is a sacred place. And I've just invited you in without even realizing what I'm doing.
Okay.
So kind of wishing I would have Googled at that point, right? Okay. And so she said, oh, we can stop, ma'am, at any point. But now I'm curious. What's going on, right?
Yeah.
So I laid back with tears in my eyes and let her finish. And they said, we're going to be having a doctor come in and look at this and talk to you in detail about what's going on with your son. So at that point, I actually showed up on the wrong day for the sonogram.
Oh, wow.
And so the doctor wasn't there. I had to talk to him on the phone, like a conference room. And so he said, it looks like your son is, or your child, because we still didn't know it was a boy yet. Looks like your child is really sick and he's got a cleft lip and a cleft palate, extra digits, definitely enlarged kidneys, a heart issue. I mean, they just started listing all of these things and my head is spinning and I'm thinking, what in the world? And the first thing I go to is, well, can I nurse him still? Can I nurse a baby that has a cleft lip and and probably a cleft palate? And they said, you know, why don't we set up another time where your husband can come and we can actually all talk through this a little bit better. And I just said, the baby's like 4 inches right now. How can you even tell that it has a cleft lip or a cleft palate or extra digits? I don't even understand. I said, how could you be wrong? And they said, less than 1% were wrong about this. And so we went in the next day, they made time for us. And my husband and I met with a genetics counselor and was very clear with her that we want this baby and we don't care the diagnosis and we would like to meet it no matter what that means for our family. So the doctor comes in and I just said, you know, I saw a cute little button nose. I saw sweet little hands. I don't understand. Where are these images of, you know, extra digits? And he said, well, you know what? Why don't we just go in and take a look right now at your baby? We've got a sonographer here, we'll just go look. And they started right on my belly and our baby was in a perfect position, way better than he was the day before for them to see his brain. And the sonographer said, oh, look at that. And I thought, what in the world? And she said, his brain is not divided into two hemispheres. And so then at that point, our doctor said, you know, there's more than likely your son probably has a condition called trisomy 13, and it's an extra 13th chromosome. And so he kind of reminded us about trisomy 21, which is Down syndrome, and then trisomy 18 and trisomy 13, which generally speaking, trisomy 13 is life-limiting, fatal diagnosis.
Okay, so let's just not go that far out yet. The rest of that day, what was that like?
Oh, gosh. I mean, I just didn't really want to believe it, but it seemed like it was true. I mean, I finally did see extra digit on the sonogram.
Was that helpful or was it?
Yeah, it was for me. Later on in the pregnancy, we go on to have a, some people call it 3D, some people call it 4D. I don't really know which one it is, but it's like
some
a 3D.
Kind of D, yeah.
D, exactly. sonogram. And that one was the one that was super helpful for me because I had prayed like, God, this is planned and I trust you. And I know that even if you don't miraculously heal Simon in some way that we think is healing, that would be fix his heart, divide his brain, fix his kidneys, make his mouth perfect, take away those extra digits, that I know he was perfectly made in your image. And so it was nice to see that on that 3D ultrasound. He had a very pronounced cleft lip. Okay. And that was the one thing I was really worried about seeing. I didn't know what that would look like. I was a little nervous, kind of scared. Yeah,
that's good. I love that you're saying that because I think a lot of times we don't want to admit that we're scared about something like that.
Oh, yeah. It's embarrassing. It's your child. And so you want to think that you're this brave. I mean, and how many people told us, oh, you guys are so brave. And we're like, we are not choosing this. This is not our choice. We have been given this. And this was given to us by the man who is in charge of this completely broken world because of Genesis 3. Yeah. And now we are in control of how we handle it.
So let's talk about that.
Yeah.
I'm assuming that there was no question about whether or not you were going to end the pregnancy.
Yeah.
And so talk to me about what was it like with healthcare professionals and what did they say and what did you choose and what was that like? Because you mentioned to me that one of your concerns is women not being given the full range of options when they're told about these conditions with their babies.
Yeah. So for us, like we had talked in pre-marriage class at our church in San Francisco, we talked about wanting the children that God gave us. And it's just, it's amazing that God gave us that quick little chat. I mean, we had no idea what we were committing to.
Yes.
When any of us sign up for parenthood, in whatever form that is, we don't know what we're signing up for, right? So we're just saying yes to whatever falls into our lap in whatever way that he chooses. But for us, we did not want to terminate. They, medical professionals, and this is a blanket statement. I love our medical professionals.
It's totally
fine. Thank you for being a nurse.
You're so welcome.
I love labor and delivery nurses. Our genetics counselor, I had mentioned that day we went in and talked to her. You know, she's doing her job, and her job is to give you the facts and to give you information. And I have read anywhere from about 90 to 96% of these babies, like Simon, our baby with trisomy 13, are terminated. And so about, you know, 10 to 4% or so are given a chance at life, whether that be inside a womb or some chance to breathe. And for us, we were going to wait until birth. A lot of people call it caring to term. I like to call it caring to birth because sometimes your full term might be 20 weeks or your full term might be 24 weeks. I mean, you just don't really know with these babies when they're ready to come, they're going to come. And whether they come on their own with you laboring in your home or they come by induction because your doctor says the baby's living right now, it looks like it would be a good time to go ahead and meet this baby. You're at full term at 37 weeks or 38 weeks. You know, it all depends on the state that you live in.
Okay, so their thought at that moment would be have the baby while the baby's alive so that you can have that time together.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what some of the moms are moving toward right now. For us, I want to be very delicate in the way I say this because I love all of the moms that I have met that have had babies who have life-limiting diagnoses. So I just want to be careful in how I say this. For us, we just did not want to take Simon's birth into our own hands. We had control once he decided to come of what we did, and did we baptize him? Did we dedicate him? Did we sing to him? Did we have a birthday party for him? Yes, we wanted to do all those things. And for us in the birth plan, regardless of if he was alive or if he wasn't, we were going to do the same thing.
Okay.
And once I did go into labor, I labored at home for quite a bit. I was in denial. I was about 36 weeks plus 4 days,
mm-hmm.
nearly full term.
Why were you in denial?
I don't know. I was just kind of like, man, this is the end of the rope.
And you know what's about to happen, and you know it's not going to be warm and fuzzy like you would hope. Yeah.
Well, and that's what we thought. I mean, we just didn't really know if he'd breathe. And so I show up to the hospital, and he was littler, obviously, both because of his condition, but also because he was 36 weeks gestation. He still had a month to grow. He was growing so well. And I should also say that we treated my pregnancy with him as normal. We could have chosen to go that route, but as far as I could understand, Simon was an infant, was a baby in utero that needed love, that needed his mom, and that just needed to grow. And so to have special monitoring on him, I just didn't really need those extra visits and that extra pressure. And I just wanted to see what God was going to do with his life. And I trusted, even if he was stillborn, even if he was a miscarriage, you know, if he would have come just a few weeks after his diagnosis. I mean, I trusted somehow or another we were going to get through, you know, this what appears to be, it's a really tragic loss.
What was that like? I mean, I've never had a baby in my tummy for like, I mean, I know I'm a nurse. Right. That's a ridiculous thing to say. That's not actually where it is. I understand that. But what was that like to have that going on every day, knowing that what's growing, the world is going to tell you it's wrong or messed up?
Yeah.
What was that like on your mental health?
It was tough. We did the very best that we could to kind of like live life with Simon in utero. So we did a lot of dance parties, and we talked to our oldest. I mean, Teddy was, he was 19 months when Simon was born. So he didn't really understand, which honestly, it was a blessing because I had time to grieve while he napped. And then I could grieve in front of him. And he doesn't have a full memory of, you know, mommy being really sad.
Yeah.
Angie Smith has this book, I Will Carry You. And it's this balance. I don't know if you've read it.
I haven't read it, but I know who she is.
Yeah. She talks about it, a balance of between grief and joy and dancing between the two. And it really is just this delicate balance.
Okay.
For instance, I was at, so much obviously happens at the grocery store for me. I keep talking about the grocery store. We're at the deli counter, Teddy and I were, and I'm pregnant with Simon, and this older gentleman, probably about my dad's age, says to me, oh, when are you due? And I said, oh, well, in June, if not before. And he said, oh, well, as long as he's healthy. And, you know, that's another one of the situations. Do I tell this guy or do I not? I let it go. Obviously, in the deli counter, it just, maybe it could have been something lovely, maybe not. But I was just kind of thinking, oh, man, you don't even know.
And you got to be kind to yourself. Some days you're just not up for those conversations. You're grieving.
Yeah, those things happened. Another time I went to the party warehouse store and I wanted to get Simon birthday plates because we had a birthday party for him. Like I said, no matter if he was going to breathe or not, we were having a birthday party. And so I was getting him plates, and this, I said to this lady, I'm doing like baby blues and polka dots. And she said, oh, well, I've got the perfect thing for you. And so she walks me over to the baby shower aisle and she says, this one right here. And the plate says, 10 happy fingers and 10 happy toes.
Oh, no.
And Simon had 12 fingers and 11 toes. And I just laughed. I mean, I laughed so hard. I was like, you know what? That's actually not going to work for this child.
But oh my gosh.
I mean, and I could laugh about it. Yeah, and I think, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think Simon would laugh too, like, you fools, you're all going to get to heaven. You're going to have 12 fingers and 12 toes too. So, I mean,
who knows?
So yeah, we ran into stuff like that.
Oh, okay. I asked you one of the struggles that you were having, and you said there's a balance between being thankful and living out your real life, like you were talking about with Angie's book. And I wanted you to read for me the question that you answered and how you answered it, because I thought it was really beautiful and hard, but good.
Yeah, you want me to read it?
Is that what
you
said? Please.
Okay. The balance of being thankful for what we have while also living out real life is one thing I'm struggling with right now. I know what it's like to watch your baby's body be driven off by a white funeral van stranger. It was so hard. It was just so hard to hand our baby's body over to this. I mean, this man had this huge beard too, which was kind of creepy, but he took our baby and he drove away with him. And it was just like, it took everything in the whole wide world to not fall on my knees and just scream like, stop.
Yeah.
Why are you taking him?
Yeah. I'm so sorry.
Yeah. I hope you can understand through my tears. Yeah. I know what an empty bassinet looks like. Simon's body left an indention in the bassinet. And I know what it looks like to be empty. I know what it feels to leave with your baby's body in a little box rather than one who is alive. It's a blessing to raise three kids on earth and mother two in heaven, but it is so tiresome. Sometimes I just want to go away and be alone and not be touched. Our 1.5-year-old, Peter, is obsessed with me and he follows me around everywhere.
Okay.
and it is exhausting and it's just a tough balance. I know that it's normal and it's natural. It's just a really tough balance to be a mom to these babies in heaven and to be a mom to babies on earth.
Yeah.
I know what we've missed out on. And I know so many women can imagine what that feels like. But I know what we've missed out on. I feel the weight of these babies not here in our house.
Do you? Okay. What does that look like, you say, to parent them who are in heaven? What brings you comfort? What brings you connection with them? How important is that? How important is that to a mom, like if she's feeling at a loss? I've never at this point lost anybody like so, so close to me that it's a daily thing I have to live with.
Yes.
My assumption is it feels like kind of like an itch you can't scratch when you're trying to like
yes.
find that comfort in whatever. So how do you find that with them? How important is that to find? How would you encourage a mom to find it?
I think as a bereaved mom, it's really important to make time to figure out your way to parent these babies who are not with us. And I do think that there is a way that you can parent them. For me, I think in the beginning, it was my grief. It was like my mourning and that suffering of longing for them was a way to honor them. And I believe that that's true still. And I will be mourning and grieving them for the rest of my life.
Okay.
But it's not that same, you're in the desert or stuck out in the ocean, just constantly getting hit by waves and that you can't come up
yeah.
grief for me, you know, so much anymore.
Okay.
There are days where it's like that. But now I find that the way that I'm honoring and mothering these boys is one by talking about them
okay.
and by just saying that I'm their mom
yeah.
and that they existed and that I feel kind of stupid, especially we haven't talked about Thomas very much.
I know. But yeah, I want to get there.
Yeah, he was a miscarriage. We got pregnant 3 months after Simon died.
Wow.
And 3 months after that, Thomas died. And so it was this death upon death.
What was the second one like as the second loss coming on the heels of the first loss?
Yes.
What was different about the second one? Was it harder? Did it kind of compound?
It did. It all compounded. Simon's life was his own, and that was his own suffering. And it kind of drives me crazy when people are like, it's like you've lost someone, lost, that's another funny word, but someone has died in your family. And someone said, but you know, their funeral is going to save so many lives to Christ. And it's like, that's yes, that's lovely. I mean, yes, thank you. But I want my baby here, you
yeah.
know. Is that the point of their life? I don't know the answer to that.
I
don't know that that's the right answer. I think that we just try to throw out, you know, as much as we can.
Just say some words and it doesn't always land. Mostly doesn't land.
Exactly. But with Thomas, I was angry. Where, you know, with Cyan, I was thankful. I mean, they told us that he might die. He's got a third chance to die in utero, a third chance to die during labor. I actually didn't wear when I was laboring. I showed up at a 9 to the hospital, ready to push.
Yeah.
So walked in with a cake too. I had his birthday cake in my hand.
Oh, for heaven's sakes.
And so
moms can do literally anything.
Anything.
I just imagine you like about to have a baby, also holding a cake. We can do anything. Go ahead.
We can do anything. And so I didn't want to be hooked up to fetal heart monitoring because if he had died, I thought it would discourage my pushing and that it would slow down labor. And I just knew that his body was fragile and that labor was going to be hard on him. And if we were going to give him a chance to breathe, we need to get him out.
Okay.
And so we didn't know if he was going to be living or not, okay, or breathing or not. And so when I did push and he came out after like a push and a half, his eyes were open. That was another thing. We didn't know if he had eyeballs.
Okay.
We were pretty sure he did, but we weren't positive. Okay. But he did. And he was looking at me and kicking, and they placed him on my chest. And, you know, that was just like, we have video of it, and it was just holy and sacred and worship and just saying, thank you, God, for this baby. I mean, I would have said that even if he wouldn't have been breathing. I know it, but wow, it felt different.
What a sweet
he
gift.
Alive. Yeah. And so, so that was a gift. Thomas was a gift too, but to labor with a baby that, you know, has already died. I went into the hospital, I was induced, and I wanted to just labor his body rather than have a DNE or a DNC. I just really wanted, I wanted his body as well. And you can have, I could have taken his body after a DNE, but we just thought it was best for me to see this baby.
Okay.
For me to know another baby has died. Was it a boy or a girl? And we could tell by sight.
Okay.
That Thomas was a boy. And you know, I was angry. I just didn't really understand. I felt like, God, we have done this. We have checked that box, and we surrendered it all to you. And we gave Simon to you many times, but about five times Simon stopped breathing when he was in our care in our house. And I just kind of, I felt really abandoned.
Okay.
And I was angry with Thomas.
With God, but.
With God. Yeah. Yes. Not with Thomas. Yeah. Okay. Sorry. That was confusing. When I lost Thomas, I was angry with God. Whereas with Simon, I got to say, there wasn't an ounce of anger.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, it is very normal for you to think, most people never have to deal with this. I've already dealt with this. Like, for heaven's sakes.
Enough. Yeah. Enough of the suffering, right? I had just had enough. We just were ready for no more death. And we just, you know, it was exhausting.
So then you obviously got pregnant again.
Yeah.
What was that pregnancy discovery like?
Well, you know, to be totally honest, after Simon died, I was ready to, as soon as my milk dries up, my body is ready to go again, I wanted to have a baby. I was ready to get pregnant again. My husband, he agreed, but he wasn't fully on board.
Okay.
So that kind of made Thomas's pregnancy hard anyways. And so then when we lost him, it was extra hard. And so we just decided, we haven't even hit Simon's 1 year anniversary of his life. So let's just take a breather from this whole trying to get pregnant thing. Let's wait for Simon's first birthday and just be. We just wanted to be a family and to be grateful. And we were grateful. I definitely struggled with seeing pregnant women and baby showers. And I was supposed to have three boys now at this point. Like, I dealt with some jealousy and some comparison for sure. And we just wanted to stop comparing and to just be. And about a month and 20 days after we lost Thomas, I was pregnant again.
Heavens. Okay.
And here we go again. And that pregnancy, to answer your question, was very tough. I just felt like, okay, so I've been given an infant death through Simon. I've been given a miscarriage through Thomas. Stillbirth. That's the only thing I haven't really walked through yet. Mm. So is that what you're doing here? Like, what is this? And I think that Matthew 6 reminds us that I give you grace for today. My grace is sufficient for today. Live through today. And so what I did every day is just wake up and wait to feel the baby and see if he was living still. And, you know, getting past Thomas's date of death, the 14 weeks gestation, that was a milestone. And getting through that 20 week, you know, 18, 19, 20 week ultrasound where we found out that Simon was sick, you know, that's a milestone. And it was really tough. Pregnancy after loss is tough, but there's an online community that's really great.
I wanted to ask you about that. You didn't mention that you started it, but tell me about that. Tell me about what God has done in the wake of all this.
Yeah. So really, Simon is definitely a part of this ministry, obviously, but Thomas was really what helped place this love for the bereaved mother in my heart. Okay. I was given the gift of the ministry called You Made Me Mom. It's kind of a mouthful, but it's You Made Me Mom.
It's alliteration. It's great.
Yeah. And so what it is a support group for women who've lost babies during pregnancy or infancy. And we are a local support group. I'm hoping that maybe someday, really as God allows, to organically expand the ministry. I hope that it grows, but for now, we're based in Kansas City, and we're a support group that meets the third Thursday of every month consistently from 7 to 9 in my home here in Kansas City, Missouri. And so women who've lost babies are welcome to come. So we serve any woman, and I don't like to use the caveat of as early as, because I think that it takes away the importance of her child. But a lot of times we call a 5 weeks gestational loss an early loss. Okay. But for the losses as early as 5 weeks, all the way up to a year breathing life is what we support. And so, and everything in between. So some women come that have living children. Some moms are pregnant again after their loss. Some moms struggle with fertility while others don't. It's a little bit all over the board. But what we have in common is that we've all lost a child, whether it be in pregnancy or infancy.
So they come to your house and you... chat? Is there like a curriculum, or you have brownies, or what happens?
Yeah. See, and I don't even do brownies.
Okay.
I make it so simple. I serve water and wine and no snacks. For like the anniversary, I always have a cake.
The anniversary of?
The anniversary of the ministry. So every January, I have a little cake.
Hey.
And it's the exact same flavor that was Simon's birthday cake that I brought to the hospital.
Okay.
So it kind of is a, you know, way to recognize him. But it's very low key. I try not to make it this thing where I have appetizers and snacks. And it's not about that. It's about getting together and being vulnerable with each other and sharing what I believe is kind of the most intimate kind of portion of potentially of a woman's life. Some of the things that women share, they don't even feel really comfortable sharing with their husbands because it was their bodies that had to walk through the labor, the delivery, the empty womb, the womb that became a tomb. I mean, it's kind of like, it's tough. And it's just nice to be able to sit down with women who have walked, no one has the same story, but we can go around, tell our story, and have so much overlap. Even the woman who, you know, has no living children, has had multiple miscarriages, and, you know, is still struggling with fertility, let's say, to the woman who has 5 living children and has a baby who lived 3 months and died in their sleep. There's overlap, and there's things that we can compare and even laugh at and say, listen to this stupid thing that this person said to me this week, you know?
Yeah. Is there any portion of it that's online for like somebody who's not in Kansas City?
So youmademom.com is a place that you can go and get resources. I have a resource page, and that would be a way to serve the entire national community. I try to keep it really concise. There are so many ministries and groups that you can go to that provide support, but I really tried to narrow it down on ones that I thought were active and would respond to you. Unfortunately, some ministries don't respond as quickly and organizations don't respond as quickly. And it's just, I feel like I've narrowed it down to, in my opinion, some of the very best. So the resources page is the best way to kind of serve the broader community.
Okay.
But then, you know, my husband and I also walk with families who've been given life-limiting diagnosis with their babies in utero. And so that's also on the website. It's a very small blurb, but it says, if you are, you know, choosing between terminating your baby and walking this out with your baby, we'd love to talk to you. And whether you're in Kansas City, which most of the couples that we walk with have been in Kansas City, we Skype and email and text, and we could be anywhere. So we'd be happy to walk with anybody nationwide. And it's a trying walk. It's really trying, but there's so much beauty that can be found if you walk it out.
Yeah, I was going to ask, what is your relationship with God look like now? What have you learned about God through this?
Well,
I know you don't love the phrase God is good because it just feels really trite and irritating when
it is
used in the wrong context.
Yeah. And you know, that God is good thing is, it does just drive me kind of crazy. It's just like, my husband gets a promotion. God is good. He's so good. You're so right. But where is the God is good when my baby has been given a terminal diagnosis? No one's going to say that to you, and rightfully so. Maybe that would be inappropriate, but as a body of believers, aren't we called to say, no, 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 this is what we've been kind of practicing for. We prepare for the suffering because we know it's coming.
We know, yeah.
And then the suffering is when we have to remind ourselves, your will, God, not mine.
Yeah.
You are good. This is not good. And this is not your fault, God. You are light and you are hope. And this is not good. But I know that if I leave my hands open, I will let you do your job and you will do whatever you wanted to do and whatever kind of purpose you wanted to have for this life.
Mm-hmm.
I wish I would just hear more people use God as good in times where it feels like he's not being good, where you feel like you've been abandoned or you've been punished. I mean, especially during this Lenten season, I mean, he was put on the cross for us and he was abandoned for us and not for me to feel abandoned. So all those times that I felt I'm on my bathroom floor bleeding and crying and thinking, God, why are you doing this again? I can't be losing this baby. I felt forgotten.
Yeah,
I wasn't. I mean, he paid the ultimate abandonment when he cried out, God, oh God, why are you forsaking me?
Yeah.
Come. And God said, nope, this is the way it has to be.
Yeah. Has this strengthened your faith? How did you get over the bitterness of Thomas?
I'd be lying if I didn't say Peter, our 1.5-year-old, wasn't a sweet balm.
Mm.
And some women do not go on to have any more living children after they complete their family on a loss, if that's what you want to say. And so I don't think you have to have another baby to feel the sweet balm. But I, like I said, I'd be lying if I didn't say that Peter was a sweet balm after the loss of Thomas and Simon. Yeah. He's also a maniac and he has really tried me. And Peter will listen to this maybe someday and I love him. But, you know, he's really humbled me too and reminded me that I've got 2 in heaven. Those are wonderful babies to mother. But these ones here on earth are my current focus. And they remind me I am broken and totally messed up on a daily basis. But as far as my relationship with Christ goes, I think the biggest thing that my husband and I both learned was that so many people came to him and said, you have to be Amy's rock. You're the husband. You got to be strong. You know, just kind of these like worldly phrases. And if we didn't know better, we'd believe them. And Adam would have thought, I have to be Amy's rock and I have to be strong. And trust me, Adam, without question, was a rock. And he was so strong through all of Simon and Thomas's lives, but he just didn't need to be. I mean, I have a great savior. And I just think of all the times where I cried. The nights were the hardest when I was carrying Simon in utero. It was quiet at night. There's nothing but our noise machine, some white noise going on, and time with Jesus. And my husband's over here sleeping soundly. I mean, he had to get up and go to work. I had the next day with our son, Teddy, but he's sleeping and I'm sitting here. I'm grieving. I'm just crying. And I can't believe this baby who's kicking me and keeping me up right now. It's going to die. This doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
And I can just remember having just a visual of Jesus laying next to me saying, you aren't alone. And this guy right here, you love him, but he's not your rock. I am. Mm. And you, I'm laying with you right now and I am weeping with you. And I wish this were different too.
Mm.
But I promise I will not leave your side. I will listen to you on repeat with your fears and your concerns and anything that you want to say over and over again. I will listen and I'm not leaving you. And my husband can't offer that. I mean, he tries, but he's not my God. And so it really sweetened this relationship with Christ. I've always said, you know, the order is Christ and then my husband and then my children and then me and, you know, just kind of in that order. And I've said that, but I actually got to live it finally, truthfully, when no one else could understand but Jesus.
Yeah.
I just learned so much about surrender and just being willing to give it all to God.
Yeah. That's beautiful.
Thanks. It sounds easy now. It wasn't easy. It was very
hard. It
does
not sound easy, my friend.
Okay. Well, okay. I'm making it sound really low, you know, like, oh, and I laid with Jesus in bed. You know, it was like that, but it also wasn't. You know, it was tough. Yeah.
I'm really thankful for your heart and your willingness to stay in this place with other women, because it would be easy to move on and not look back, because you don't necessarily have to, because you're not in the middle of it. So I appreciate that.
Well, Jesus, as the man of sorrows, he teaches us how to mourn. And they called him the man of sorrows. And to enter into this broken place, to enter into a room, these women are so nice to invite me to come meet their baby after they've given birth to a baby who has been given a life-limiting diagnosis. They've invited me into their labor and delivery room. Mm. And their babies are not living anymore. They're not breathing, but their bodies remain. And it's this sacred, holy place. I mean, you really feel like you should take your shoes off before you walk into this delivery room. And to hold a baby whose soul is with God, but yet their body's still with us, it is like a kiss from God. I mean, you feel like the baby should wake up. So there's a little bit of a psychology there that's kind of tough to get around. But if you just realize the weight and the responsibility of this life in your arms. Mm. It is a gift. It's broken. It's completely broken. Death is terrible.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that death is this beautiful thing necessarily, although I believe that it can be. I just feel really lucky that these women are, I mean, blessed is a better word, although it's overdone right now. I feel like on like Instagram tags and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But I do feel blessed that these women will allow me to hold their babies who have died and pray over them and to feel like it's just a real raw connectedness with God that not very many people get to experience. And I feel blessed. That's a weird thing to say. I feel blessed to hold babies who have died, but I do.
You know, it's like I would love someday to be a hospice nurse because I feel like those are sacred moments and to be allowed in and to minister to people who are in the middle of that.
Yeah.
So I get it. It's almost like there's a tear between, you know, what separates from heaven.
Us. Yes.
And you can just kind of see like it's some interesting otherworldly moment that you're blessed to be a part of. But death is never something we're hoping for.
No.
Let me ask you very practically, when the baby has died, so you had a party, you did a cake, I know some people will have pictures taken with the family.
We did that.
What other practical things would you want a mom to not forget to do because you've only got so long until you never can have that moment back?
I think that the most important things, it feels weird. The birthday cake is a strange thing, but that's it. That's your birthday cake. And this is the time that you have with this baby. There's a device called the cuddle cot.
Yes, I wanted to talk about that. Go ahead. You guys made that up?
No, it's manufactured, made in the UK, but it's distributed here in the United States. And it's just a cooling device. So the baby doesn't have to be transferred between the mom and baby's room to the morgue to cool its body in order to preserve it, which I know is morbid in all sense of the word.
But it gives you more time with the baby.
Yeah. And so if your hospital has a cuddle cot, they're going to let you know if your birthing center, whatever, wherever you are, they're going to let you know if they have one.
Okay.
But I think it's important that all hospitals have these cooling cots because what they do is they extend time. So you can have a birthday party. You can baptize your baby. You can sing over your baby. You can have other family members walk in and hold your baby. And I mean, yes, the body does rapidly change, but this cooling cut does slow down the changes.
Okay.
And it's remarkable. I just met a baby a few weeks ago and he was about 26 hours after he died. I was holding him and he looked, Simon had that dusky look all the time. I mean, he looked like he could breathe. He just needed a little oxygen. And so it was amazing that they were able to preserve his body so well with the cooling cot.
And they'll let you stay in the hospital for that extended time and do what you need to do?
Yeah, it kind of depends. Normally, it's just as long as the mom needs to stay. If she's had a C-section, you know, then she's going to stay a little bit longer. But if not, some, especially children's hospitals, if you need to leave your room because your insurance is lovely and running out or whatever, and your stay is done and mom's okay and she needs to leave, they do have special rooms that you could also go to within the hospital. Not all hospitals, but a lot of them can come up with a space for you to go to that, you know, doesn't have a bed, that just has some chairs and you could spend some more time. Funeral homes also offer that. And this is one thing that might seem weird, but all states pretty much allow you to wake your baby at home. So if you would want to, I know this sounds off.
You mean to have a wake for the baby?
That's right. You could leave the hospital with your baby. Sometimes you need to have it transported by someone else. Sometimes you can transport it yourself and bring your baby home. I know this is not for everyone. Some people know right off the bat, that's not for me. That's really weird. I don't want to do that. Okay. For others, it's very healing to have their baby in their home, to have others come to their home instead of the hospital.
Because that was ultimately the goal, right? That's like where you had hoped that they would be for years and years. So I can understand why that would be what you would want.
I do too. I mean, I see both sides to that. I know some people that just wouldn't work. So I just like to say that because I think most hospitals are not going to offer that because it's a lot of paperwork to transport a deceased body.
Okay.
But it is worth all the paperwork and it is their rights. And so I like to kind of share that.
That's a big deal.
The last thing, I had, wore this sweater during Simon's life and it said his name on it. It was a cardigan. It just said Simon Adam. And I've never washed it. And I still have it. I wear it on his birthday every year.
Okay.
And we were able to leave the hospital 15 hours after Simon died. And we brought him home and he resided in our home for 7 days and 22 minutes and died right here on my couch where we're sitting in my husband's arms. And we were able to bring him home. But if we weren't, we considered having his body at least here. And after he died at 10:17 p.m. on May 21st. And we went upstairs and my husband and I, about 45 minutes after he died, we were sound asleep. It was a really Holy Spirit-filled moment of his life being taken. We were exhausted. We hadn't slept for a week.
Yeah.
And we went to sleep. And we had his body, obviously, the next morning, 14 hours after he died, and spent time with it and then called hospice and let them know that he had died and that we needed the funeral home to come.
Okay. Well, thank you for sharing all that. Just such personal, raw things that you never would have hoped would happen, but what a blessing to other moms who are in that same situation and helpful for the rest of us who haven't walked through it and don't really know what to say or what to do and all that. It gives us kind of a glimpse into what that's like so we can better love our friends who have gone through it.
Yes. Well, thank you. Thank you for all that you do for moms and just for your vulnerability in sharing every single week and taking the time to put this podcast together.
Lots of sharing. You are so welcome. It's a joy. It's a joy. We're out of time, but I cannot help myself. What can you not stop talking about right now?
Oh, yes. Okay. So this is probably my number one thing.
Okay.
We're renovating a house right now and I'm trying to pick out gold faucets.
Okay.
And first, do you know how expensive faucets are?
Faucets
are expensive.
Okay.
I had no idea. Okay. I mean, like, I just couldn't believe how expensive faucets were. And now I want the gold trendy faucet, the like brushed satin brass.
Yeah.
And they're really expensive. I think I'm going to be doing it no matter what. But,
well, yeah.
I mean, it's going to be beautiful and it's going to be the highlight of the kitchen. But I've been talking about gold faucets. I know that's not very exciting for some people, but
you're getting a new kitchen. That's incredibly exciting.
That is incredibly exciting. I went over today, took a look at it. It's going to be nice and open. It's going to be a great space that we can raise our family in and have lots of friends over and you made me mom gatherings and it'll be great.
You need the faucet that you love.
I think so too. I was going to settle for one that was half the price.
Nope.
I think so too. I told my husband, I was like, I will figure out some other way to save. And he's like, no, you're going to keep saying that over and over and over again. I'm like, I know. I was like, but I think we need the like really good gold faucet.
You spend so much time washing dishes.
And looking at the faucet.
All the looking, all the washing. You need the faucet.
All the dripping from like the cheaper faucet that we have right now. I don't want any more dripping. I just want a good one.
Get a good one. I fully support the good one.
Thank you.
Tell your husband because I know he really cares what I think.
Absolutely. I'll tell him.
Okay, awesome. Yay. Well, you have a good rest of your day. Thank you so, so much for all that you do for moms.
Thank you. Yes, thank you. So good to chat.
Oh, man. The weight of the brokenness of this world just really presses in heavy when you hear stories like this. I was struck, though, by the otherworldly peace that she experienced through all of it. It made me think of a friend of mine who worked as a translator in hospital. Her job was to translate conversations between the Spanish-speaking patients and the doctor. And I don't know any of the details of the story, and it would have been illegal for her to tell me, but she came away from one particular experience completely changed. So there was a woman, and I believe the story goes that her son had just passed away, and my friend had to translate everything that the mom said to the doctor, and the mom dropped to her knees, and she wasn't even talking to the doctor, she was talking to God, and she just thanked him for all the time that he had allowed her to spend with her son. I just can't imagine You know, I think as Christ followers, we are either the largest group of wackadoos around to believe all that stuff the Bible says, or we serve the living God of all comfort, who gives peace that passes all understanding and is near to the brokenhearted. You guys, as much as we want to avoid anguish on this earth, you've got to admit that it makes a serious impact on onlookers when we respond like Amy did, and like that woman in the hospital, to the tragic things that are going to come in our lives. And we're never going to do it perfectly. I promise, I was such a baby about the various heartbreaks that have happened in my life. 6 years of infertility could have been handled a lot better. My husband lost his job 2 years ago. I was still somewhat of a basket case. But the more I get to know God, the more I embrace and believe that He is who He says He is, and He loves me like He says He does, the more I'm able to relax and trust that He has got this under control. It still hurts like the dickens, but there's an abiding steadiness and a peace that makes it oddly a sweet time. So what will your strategy be to struggle well this week, ladies? Maybe if you can identify with Amy's story and you haven't read the book that Amy mentioned called I Will Carry You by Angie Smith, I put the link in the show notes if you're interested in reading that. Maybe there's an awkward question or comment that you regularly get when you're running errands with your kids, and you can take some time to craft a response that's kind and gracious that you can have ready to point them to God and the hope that you have in knowing Him. The Bible says we need to be ready to give a response for the hope that we have. So if you get the same question all the time, you might as well get a solid response ready. Maybe you stop and pray for comfort and healing right now for the women all over the world who are currently broken over their new title of bereaved mother. And please, whoever you are, make a note of the name of Amy's community, You Made Me Mom, in case you ever know of someone that you can point in Amy's direction. All right, ladies, no matter what your struggle is this week, you know you have one. Make sure that if you haven't already, go to milkandhoneyteas.com and grab your Struggle Well shirt that she has made, especially for listeners of this show. Milkandhoneyteas.com. I hope mine comes in the mail soon. I can't wait. I'm going to be living in that thing. All right, ladies, I think that's enough for today. We'll see you next time. Have a great week of struggling well.